What's up, everybody? This is Rayfield Davis. You're now listening to the Boiler Up with Rayfield Davis podcast, brought to you by the Field of 68 Podcast Network. Sit back, listen up, subscribe, leave some comments, let me know how you feel. Hope you guys enjoy. Boiler Up. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Boiler Up with Rayfield Davis show, brought to you by the Field of 68 Podcast Network. Our first guest, one of my favorite people in the world, someone I consider family, someone I've never told to his face, but I consider him one of my uncles, one of my first people to ever believe in me, one of the people that stuck with me even through hard times. Coach Matt Painter, everybody.
How we doing, Ray?
I'm doing well, Coach. I know I'm excited to have you here for like a full circle moment. Coach, I know I don't talk about me yet, but I know a lot of fans, especially on Twitter, they want to know a lot about you, the man behind the team. So I do want to talk a little bit about your early playing days, kind of when you started to play basketball. Yeah. When did you know you was good? Kind of get into some of that.
Yeah. You know, being from Muncie, where I was from, there was a lot of good basketball. There was the high school basketball when I was growing up was really good. The main school in our city, Muncie Central, they won the state in 1978 and 79. Or it was 79-80. I think it was 78-79. And they were really good. They had two guys on the 78 team that went to Nebraska. The next year, Ray McCollum was on their team, who ended up being Ball State's all-time leading scorer before another person from Muncie, Bonzi Wells, beat his record. But it was just, you know, the teams were so good, like Muncie North Side, Muncie South Side. So you grew up, Anderson had a lot of good teams. You know, Fort Wayne being an hour and, you know, a half away, maybe a little bit less, you know, halfway in between them, you know, Marion was so good. And so, like, you had these small towns like Muncie, Anderson, Marion that just had a lot of players. Whereas, since I've been at Purdue, if you go back and look at the 15 years, 16 years I've been at Purdue, I mean, there's a guy every now and then from those cities where there was a guy almost every year from those cities. And so, like, Fort Wayne would have, you know, so many guys. Like, when I was growing up, like Indiana had, you know, Tracy, what was Tracy's guy? I'm from Homestead that went to IU, ended up transferring to UAB. John Flowers from your high school at Southside. Cam Stevens was a guy that was younger than me from the same high school. Like, you could just go on and on, like, who was from Northside, who was from Concordia, Ricky Hall was from Concordia. You could just go and name a high school and say, okay, they had this guy at Purdue, this guy at Indiana, and now it's just – it's different. You know, it's just different. It's just the way a lot of people have went to the bigger cities where Fort Wayne still has players because it's a bigger city. Indianapolis now has more players. Even though they've always had players, they have more because there's not as many people in those small towns. So I came from one of those – towns, and it's kind of interesting what you said. Like, I never thought I was any good, and so, like, I was probably the best player on my third grade team or my fourth grade team or my fifth, but I never thought I was any good, because when you would go to the Y or you go to the boys club or you go play pickup, you weren't any good. Like, you know what I mean? You just weren't. And so, like, I never, even though I was confident in myself because I would have that reference point to play against all, you know, 10-year-olds or whatever it would be growing up. But then you got into middle school and then they started to zone and I didn't have a jumper. And it was like, oh man, we're undefeated. And now we're 16-4. Oh man, now we're 8-10. My eighth grade year, we were 8-10. It wasn't like we were playing the Celtics either. It was, you know, just average talent. And so, like, that was awakening for me. So, like, growing up and growing around basketball, I had a full court basketball court in my backyard. 50-foot slab of concrete that my mom and dad built for my brother and I. It had floodlights. So we had these floodlights that we made out of railroad ties and just took it up. If you could just picture just kind of a T, if you just made railroad ties and you made a, I would guess, a 12, 13, 14-foot thing to put lights on, then there was these pine trees behind them that knocked the wind down a little bit. And so I could play basketball, you know, 24/7. That was my deal. We had people waiting at my house for next. Think about that. Like, you go somewhere and you know how you lie about it. Like, man, I had next, when in reality you didn't have next, but you're lying about it because you don't want to wait for an hour. We had people waiting next at my house playing pickup. Like, that's how many people that we would have there. So that's the way we grew up. I played in a third grade league as a kindergartner. My dad coached. All the way up until fifth grade, I played YBA. I played in boys club from fourth to sixth, and obviously school basketball started. And then I started AAU, I would say, after my eighth grade year. And so, like, but on those AAU teams, like, we got going into my junior year in high school, we had a team just for Muncie and AAU get beaten double overtime in the state finals in AAU. Just guys from Muncie went there. Sean Kemp and Sean Woods beat us in double overtime, Municipal Gardens. Yeah, and we had it too. We had Cedric Van Leer that played at Miami of Ohio. We had a guy named Tony Banks that was a really good player that I think played at Kent State. We had a guard named Michael Adams that ended up playing Division II basketball. But it was pretty cool. And the best player in our city was Chandler Thompson. He was on another team. So he was on our team the year before. And so, like, those are just kind of the guys that I grew up with playing against that I always felt were better than me, and a couple of them were better than me. And so that was always a good piece. Sometimes guys get – now to where they're not getting challenged every day. Everything's organized. Everything's structured. When, man, you should be – I'll ask somebody, like, you know, what's the one goal you played on the most in your life? Now, think about it. Like, what's the one goal you shot on the most? And it used to be for guys that were my age, it was like the goal of my driveway. You know, the goal of my – and now guys don't even, like, shoot in their driveway. You're like, hey, man, like
– no, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, that was just kind of the way that – that I came up basketball wise. And so I didn't do a whole, I played sports, but I didn't do a whole lot besides that. And I think that's kind of what it gets to, is that if you want to get good at something, or you want to, now it helped that I grew, you know, it helped. I grew 9-10 inches in high school. That helps sometimes.
When did you start getting, so like, I hear you like saying, cause you never, I get what you're saying. Cause you're playing against older guys and you never right. really understand you good. I was that way, the same exact way. And then I started getting recruited, and it's some of the guys in my hometown weren't. So when did you start getting recruited? And who right. started recruiting you? Who did you like early?
Yeah, I went after my sophomore year to a couple camps, and you started to get on mailing lists. You know, it makes you feel good, but really it means nothing. But after my junior year, I had a good. I didn't play varsity. I just dressed varsity as a freshman. My JV team was undefeated. We were undefeated my freshman year in the state.
There you go.
So, but people always like look at that and they laugh. It's like, okay, when you play JV basketball, they'd be like, well, I didn't play JV basketball. Like, okay. But it was like, we were undefeated. Then the next year, we were like 20-3, but I averaged 12. I was probably 6'1", 6'2", about 155, 160 pounds. But then the 3-point line came in. That helped me. So my junior year was the first year of the 3-point line. Then I averaged like 22, 23. And that's when I started getting recruited by some people. My mom lived on Ball State's campus. So I lived over there. Like I talked about the Y, the boys club, playing, you know, my backyard, Heakin Park and McCullough Park at some tournaments and stuff. But really, like, I played more at Ball State. I would get people in college. I'd get their ID in the field and sports building and be able to go in there and play against those. So when you're 16 years old and you're playing against college students, that, you know what I mean? Like that, to me, like that, I'd always play. I'd go from practice and I'd go there and play pickup. I wasn't someone who worked on their game a lot. I shot a lot, but I played pickup a lot.
Yeah.
And so, but that was about the time when people started offering me scholarships at a mid-major level. I didn't get offered. See, I signed in the spring of my senior year. So I got offered by a couple high majors early. But I was so enamored with Indiana, and that's where my whole family went. Like, that would have been a bad decision on my part, not for any other reason that, you know, you're not better than Lyndon Jones. You're not better than, you know, Damon Bailey. I wasn't better than Greg Graham or Pat Graham. I wasn't better than those guys. And so, like, putting myself in that fray, I just would have been an extra. I'd have been like a utility infielder. You know, like, you know, you'd have got, you know, people are hurt or, you know, things right. of that nature. So it was really a blessing in disguise, but – that's all I wanted. I wanted to go there. And then I waited until the spring because I thought I could play in the Big Ten. And then Purdue picked up and recruited me. Michigan State, Minnesota, and Purdue are the three schools I visited at the end. I visited Evansville early. Evansville and Ball State. I really liked Rick Majerus. I liked Jim Cruz at Evansville. I liked those guys. But I didn't want to go to a smaller school. And that kind of ruled out Evansville. And then I didn't want to stay in Muncie, Indiana. You know, I love Muncie, Indiana, don't get me wrong, but I wanted to see something else. So right. I got one of the best stories, Ray, when I don't know if I've ever told you this, because I know you can repeat a lot of the stories that I had because I tell them over and over. But when I was, I really liked Evansville. I liked how they did things. I liked how they ran offense. I wanted to go play basketball for him and for them, but I didn't want to go to the school. It was a small school. I just didn't, you know, I wanted something bigger. than that. And so like he was like asked me earlier, like, do you think you want to come and play? Yeah, yeah. Like I was answering it. You know, I was very gullible. I was by myself. So I was very gullible. So it was kind of like I was committing, you know, but I was out there on my own. And then when I got back to my dad was like, no, you know, you're not ready for all this. You're going to wait. This isn't exactly what you want. And so, but long story short, I go back to a game that year. And so he pulls me into, Jim Cruz pulls me in to this room and just says, hey, man, I got to get going. I got to get out there. But I want to make sure you watch Scott Hafner, their leading scorer on their team, who's averaging like 25, ended up playing the NBA. Good player, really good player. He goes, we're going to use you like we're using him. We have nobody on our team that we can use that way. Next year, we're going to use you like we're using him. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you know, I've been through it a little bit to know. But I also went to his practices, and I liked the way they structured things, and I liked their motion offense. Ray, he got 65 points that night. Yeah, I'm not – like, obviously I can't just make – he had 65. So at halftime, he has 30. And a guy that was from Lafayette, Jeff, that went to Iowa and then transferred to Evansville, Mark Jewell, is on the bench. I sit on the end of the bench. I don't know if that's legal or not, but I sit next to him. And he says to me, Ray, he goes, hey, this dude hasn't missed a shot like in 2 weeks. He goes, I know he, technically he's missed some shots, but I'm telling you, like he just, like the rims, the net's not moving. Like his ball is going in. All of a sudden, I just start watching him in warmups. I'm like, man, I see what he's saying. But yeah, it's not, it's warmups. You know what I mean? I know he's good too. Like I knew, I went in and watched him practice. I know how good he was. And he actually went to Illinois and never played. He went to Illinois for 2 years, never played. And then transferred, and there was a, you know, was a great player. But he has 30 at half. I'm like, man, how in the world can you have a better half than that? He had 35 in the second half. It was crazy. And then this is what shows you how messed up. When anybody like says no to me, or some kid like says, hey coach, I'm going to commit to you, or something happens, and then they go back on it. I always reference in my mind like, hey man, you went and saw someone get 65. They told you you're going to be in that role, and you didn't go there. So pump the brakes here and give this person who just – because I've had guys text me. I'm not going to say any names. I've had a couple guys text me that are out there in the wind, like, hey, coach, I'm coming, this, that, and the other. And nothing else happened that was different. It's like August. Like, you don't play games in August. No, coach, I'm going to go somewhere else. Yeah, I bet you are. You know, so like, but I got to, like, come back and just say, like, hey, man, like, I dogged other people too. And so when you're on the other end of getting dogged, like, you got to, you know, be the adult about it, which is difficult, though.
And, coach, when you came in to Purdue, you came to play for Coach Katie. And when you came in, you played a year with the Three Amigos, right?
No, they graduated in 88, and I graduated high school in 89. When I was a freshman, Tony Jones, Ryan Burning, and Steve Scheffler were seniors. We got second in the Big Ten.
How was that coming into a situation? Similar to me, I came into a situation where the baby boilers had kind of just left. And it's kind of the older guy, DJ Bertrand, Josh, they were looking for that leadership.
Yes.
What was that like coming in as a freshman and knowing those, the Three Amigos, they just left? You guys had a lot of buzz.
I think a lot of similarities happen with that, because I think you can take some things that you went through and then what I kind of experienced coming in, where I didn't know anything before. Like, you don't know. Like, what you don't know is what you don't. You don't know. Like, you just – so they win it in 87 and 88 with a good crew there. Obviously, Doug Lee graduated in 87. Mel McCants came in as a freshman then. So him and Kip Jones were seniors in college when I was a senior in high school, just to kind of let people know. But when you're younger and you have good runs – and now it's your turn to do things. Like, you don't understand the accountability that comes with it. You just look at it and say, and we all think this way as players. You just think, if you gave me that opportunity you're giving him, I would do the same thing or better. And that's a subconscious thought a lot of times. That's not like, you know, you should have a little bit of that, but you don't understand that what comes with it.
Yeah.
And like Carson Edwards is a good example. Like, I told our guys after he left, I said, do you know who's going to get Carson's role now that he's gone? None of you. Not one of you are getting his role. I said, you know why? Because not one of you's running around, you know, burying 25-footers off the move. I go, like, but I asked them, I said, which one of you guys has put in as much time on his jumper as Carson has? And the room kind of went blank. And I just like, okay, just make sure you know, you will not get interest off an investment you don't put in. Mm-hmm. You only get interest off investments you put in, man. Like, you got to understand that. But there's no more Carson Edwards coming through here. Now, Eric Hunter can come through if he wants to. Exactly. Travion Williams. And so, like, getting them to understand, like, the best version. One of those guys kind of set his practice start and said, hey, he doesn't have Carson to yell at, so he's yelling at you. And I'm like, no, I was yelling at Carson because he wasn't guarding anybody. I wasn't yelling at him just to yell at him. I love him. But, like, I owe him. If he's not going to sprint back on D, I don't care if you average 25 or you average 2.
Right.
You know, right. Get your ass back on D. Like, what's the big deal there? And so, like, they didn't understand, like, I'm actually positive.
Right.
But I'm not going to be positive off of you jogging back on D. I'm not going to be positive about you not listening to what I'm saying. Like, when you have guys like yourself, PJ, Grady, Dakota, like, Klein had such a high basketball IQ and he came from such a good basketball culture. Like, you didn't have problems with any of you guys in that thing. But I also wasn't repeating myself a lot.
Right, right.
And then when you have a nucleus of people that it's like why I jumped on your wagon as that we had that bad year and you're a freshman, because all you were trying to do, even though you were making mistakes, was trying to do what I asked. And if you have that and you're good, because everybody in the locker room's good, you're going to move. But what happens with it is you see success. Like, the team we went to the Elite Eight with and won a Big Ten championship with, our guys that were starting, those guys were the backups the year before. Exactly. And they proved they were starters.
Right.
Like, Grady Eifert proved he was a starter. Not a lot of people believed me, but I watched it every day. Yeah. So people were like, oh, you're 6-5. You need to move from him. He's the last dude I'm moving from this. Yep. He rebounds. He doesn't turn the ball over. He knows what the hell's going on. He embraces the physicality of the game. Why should I take him out?
Right.
I'm keeping him in.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so, like, that's what I always say, like, when I on some of those clips is, like, so many people want to be Carson Edwards. And you can't.
Right.
You can't. Like, he's dynamic. He's, you know, the way he's built, the way he's, you know, explosive, the way he's fast, the way he has a quick release, like that's a special thing. But he also worked towards that. He has some natural God-given ability, but his biggest strength is his jump shot, and he put in a lot of time where, like, a lot of guys could be like Grady. You know, they just could, but they don't want it in their mind. That's not cool enough. But the only thing that Grady helped us do was win. And that last time I checked, that's the only thing that matters.
Right.
And so, like, when you're getting those groups of guys, like, the guys around him, they were perfect for Carson.
Right.
Because they brought a lot of things that, you know, he wasn't great at and allowed him to be himself. Whereas the year before, Carson actually had a better year. His sophomore year, he actually had a better year than his junior year. Now, obviously, at the end of the year, he was just out of this world. Right. You know, and so – but guys don't understand that accountability. Like, in recruiting, they should talk about accountability. They should talk about trust. Because if I don't trust you, I don't play you. But think if you recruited somebody and you said that to them.
They'd
be like, oh, this dude doesn't believe in me. It's like, no, it's like you keep jumping in the air to pass. Like, you don't know, you know, you're not in the same county as your man. Like, you don't even, like, you don't know his number. You don't know what he looks like. Like, if you can't guard somebody and you can't play without turning, how are you going to play? Well, you don't. But nobody talks about in recruiting. They're like, oh, man, they're in Coach Payne's doghouse. No, they're not.
Right.
Keep throwing the ball to the other team. I'm supposed to encourage that because they're talented? You learn to be productive,
right.
And that's what you had to learn to be. You learn to be productive, and being productive starts with being simple. And a lot of guys don't understand that because that's not cool, but that's mental toughness. Mental toughness is being able to do simple things over and over and over again, and that's how you develop into a good player. You might have a lot of things that go with you, but until you can get that structure into your game and your understanding of what's going on, you're not going to grow. But that's where you've seen different groups dip. You know, the 1989 team, long time ago, they won those Big Ten championships in 87 and 88. They dipped. So then when I came in as a freshman in that first year, Gene Katie was out of his mind, Ray. He was out of his mind. He's throwing his jacket. He's getting a tech every other – I mean, he was – and I loved it. I was on the bench. I was like – I was calling my dad. I'm like, Gene Katie is the best, Dad. This, you should hear what he says to these officials. I go, but hey, we're laying it on the line. Like, to me, like, it was great. I'm like, man, I chose the wrong school. I wasn't getting any burn. I was like, I loved it. I loved how he was because he was real.
Yeah,
like, you never, like, he never left me with, like, I didn't know how he felt. Like, he had an unbelievable way of ripping your ass and telling you were okay in the same sentence. I'm like, is he mad? Is he happy? what is it? But, like, we were competing, man. Like, we were competing. Like, we almost won the Big Ten that year. We were 2-seed in the NCAA tournament. But that, to me, was like, you know, that was – but, like, we had the right seniors. Ryan Burning, Chef, Tony Jones. Those guys had been through some adversity after they had won. So those guys, freshman and sophomore years, they won the Big Ten. Their junior year, they were 15 and 16. And if I reeled off all the guys on the team, they were stacked. They were 15 and 16. Hey. Didn't go to the tournament. And then the next year, we're a 2-seed in the tournament. So those guys flipped it real quick. Right. So it allowed you to come in and see what was right. Not everybody comes in and sees that. Mm-hmm. And as you see, the programs will dip a little bit here and there. And that's what you have to have. You have to be able to get old. And it dipped early in your career. And then you were, you know, obviously a great leader and got some of that stuff flipped. Like, having PJ and Grady here as a GA, like, every now and then they'll pop up and say something that you were doing that I had no idea. You know, dude's walking in 2 seconds late and you're making him go, you know, on the Versa climber, like, just on your own. Nope, sorry. And it's PJ, you know what I mean? It's like somebody who's just trying to do everything that he's supposed to do and he comes in 2 seconds late. Nope, get on that Versa climber. And, like, I had no idea about that. But those are the things that it's like, hey, man, we're not going to lose. Like, right, that kind of leadership is like, hey, we're not going to lose. We're not doing it. And that's what you have to have. And if your assistant coaches are more like your captains, you can grow into it a little bit, but you're probably a little bit in trouble right there. You're probably got some trouble. Like, right. You got to get – and your best players got to be your hardest workers. Like, if you got guys that are scoring the ball and they're your leading scorer and they don't stay after or come early or do something extra – that's probably not going to work in the long haul because it gets to be such a grind. Like, you lose your focus of what you're doing. Like, man, we're trying to compete to get into the NCAA tournament, win a bunch of games and make a splash. Right. But, like, when you're grinding it out, like, you're like, man, I need a little bit of a break here. I need this or whatever. But if you're not tough mentally, you'll succumb to that and you'll show your weakness. But if you got a mental toughness about you, like, no, this is what we got to get this one. We got to get this one. Even though we've won two in a row, like, we can't let these wins soften us. Exactly. And so, like, you get a lot of that, and that's where that leadership has to come in. And it's really when the coaches aren't around. You know, the coaches are going to lead. The coaches are going to say things, but who's grabbing that baton and taking those same words and making sure that those things get applied when coaches aren't around?
That's true.
Ray, this is really easy for you. Like, you ask one question, and I talk for, like, 10 to 15 minutes. Like, this is, like –
it's beautiful. Uncle Paint. So look, one thing I do want to know, and this is just, I ain't had this written down or nothing, but hearing this and even hearing about Coach Katie and hearing some stories, and you've been around a lot of talented guys. I didn't even get into playing with Big Dog, but, like, how did you know that this is for you? Where did all of this, was this something you knew? Because I've always wanted to ask this, honestly. Did you always know you was going to be a coach? Did you always just grasp basketball differently, see it differently? How did you gain all this knowledge?
Yeah, I've just been around it. Like, you know, when I was a kindergartner, I played in the third grade league in Muncie. And so, like, my dad, like, coached me. Like, and so, like, that was just, you know, the way it was. You know, just I didn't know any different. Like, I always played. I always – but I was in basketball environments. You know, like Newcastle, when I was a sixth grader, Steve Alford was a senior in high school. So I saw Steve Alford play, I'd say 10 to 12 times that year. Like, I saw him get 56 against Broad Ripple in the morning round in the semi-state, went 25 for 25. Then they got beaten that night round.
25 for 25 from the field?
Free throw line.
Over the free throw line.
Yep. Beat Broad Ripple. And then they went to the night, had 56. Then they went to the night game and they got beat by Connersville. They had the Heineman twins. One went to Davidson. One went to Wisconsin, and then Connersville went on to win the state. That was, I think that's 83, if I'm not mistaken. So we had a guy that lived down the street from me that was in Steve's class that played at Northside. His name was Mike Abrams. He ended up playing at Louisville. So he was just, like, right down the street. Muncie Northside also had a guy named Billy Butts who went to Michigan. Like, they were, like, the third best team in the city. Like, and so, like, when you're sitting there saying, okay, this, you know, Marion, which was coming through the chute, you know, won three state titles. And that was my 8th, 9th, and 10th grade years. Then you talk about my middle school years with that team at Muncie Northside. Talk about Newcastle and Steve Alford. You know, Newcastle is only 20 minutes away from us. UC Marion's only 30 minutes away from us. Obviously, the team's in Muncie. You know, and Muncie Southside was good. You know, Biggs was at Muncie Southside, Lawrence Jordan. So he was there. My senior year in high school, they went to the Elite Eight. They got beat by Eric Montrose and those guys. Muncie South did. So, like, you just think of, like, all those guys and, like, you think about all that. That's what you were around. Like, you were around and you were competitive. What was good for me was I really wasn't that good. And so it took me to, like, to grow and to get better. The three-point line helped me. But being around those guys really helped me because you were always trying to improve. You're always trying to get better, you know, with that. But it was just – that's just the way it was.
And then, Coach, I know I want to just ask a few questions about just kind of where you are now in the season. Kind of about the team now. I know you mentioned Eric. I know you mentioned Travion. I know you guys – you're coming off a big win. I never won at Michigan State. That's something I still think about today.
So, yeah.
Where are you guys now kind of heading into the IU game? How big of a game is this? Big week, rivalry. Kind of go into that a little bit.
Well, you know, we had a schedule where you look at our schedule and we have 4 out of 5 games on the road. And then the one home game that we have gets canceled because of COVID. So we had 4 straight road games. And so for our team, you know, I felt like we were in a good position against Rutgers. Heck, Rutgers had 3 guys that were out. Then they have some guys make shots in the game that they haven't made since. And it was just one of those games that we felt like we should have won. You know, we get to the Illinois game, we go on an 18-0 run, but we weren't able to piece everything together against Illinois to really be there, even though we lost by 8. And they missed a bunch of free throws. So it was very deceiving. Like, oh, you lost by 8. Like, hold on now. They missed a bunch of free throws. It was more than that. We just – that consistency across the board with Iowa, just that consistency. And we have to be detail-oriented with this group. We have the talent. We have the pieces. We don't have a mature pulse about us at times. And that's where I thought other night we had some guys who couldn't make a shot, did other things to help us win. And obviously we realized that we had to go to the well a lot with Travion because that was our matchup. And Travion's so good that, like, if he gets double teamed, that could be the best thing for our offense too, because the way he can pass. And so, like, that's, you know, getting him to fight for deep position, when he does that, you know, it really puts the other team in a bind, whether they stay one-on-one with him or – and then he made some free throws too, which, you know, he's a career 50% free throw shooter. So him, you know, making some free throws, you know, helping his confidence. You know, Eric, you know, was hurt and was out and then came back and he played really well in practice leading up to before he got hurt. Then when he came back, it took him a little bit of time, but he played really well at Notre Dame, in the Notre Dame game in Indianapolis. And then coming back from that, I think you just kind of expect that now that's the way it's going to be. And that's not the way it's going to be. You know how sometimes you get into conference and you're like, man, it's just another. And you know, and he's been through that before and he's stepped up before and he's played well in conference play in the past. And now other night, I thought he did some really good things defensively. You know, he got that steal late. He did some things, but he hasn't got on track yet offensively. And I think when he just kind of settles into the game and just takes what they give him, you know, he's going to have more success. And then you get into kind of a rhythm of things. I thought Aaron did some good things the other night defensively, you know, for us. You know, Sasha didn't make shots, but, like, Sasha's very steady. And, like, when he's in the game, it's kind of like Dakota. Like, you have a better – even sometimes when Dakota didn't do a lot of things on a box score, at the end of the day, we were better when he was in. Like, you know, if you're better offensively, you know, and you're better defensively when you're in the game, you know, it speaks volumes. And so he's just been that for us. He's been very steady, even though he's not the passer or a guy that could make a pull-up like Dakota could.
Right. But this young group you have, because that's a good group of, I mean, juniors, does a young group remind you of a group that you had before, or is it just completely different?
It's completely different because of what we're going through, you know. We expected Ethan Morton to give us more, but then he has mono, and so he's just physically playing catch-up. It's been really hard for him, and then it's been hard for me to piece him in there. I don't always have him with the best group. I'm just getting him minutes instead of having him in there with the right group. Sometimes when you sub, if you've never done it before, you don't realize that you don't think about the 8th, 9th, 10th man. You just don't. you think about the first, second, and third, and rightfully so. You know, and so, like, sometimes you don't always – you're getting somebody in, but you're not getting them in to where at times you hear coaches say, the game wasn't for him. I wasn't going to put him in a bad spot. As a player, I would say, no, I'm good. Put me, you know, put me in there. Like, but it's not – I've put him in some bad spots because I'm just – I want him to play. I know how good of a player he is. Jaden Ivey wants it all. And so really talented dudes want it all. And he has to keep it simple. And until he can keep it simple, you know, he's not going to get a little bit of it. He just isn't. But once he, you know, he's had a couple good games for us, he's going to remain inconsistent until he can just let things come to him. Take your open ones, drive when you have angles. Other night against Michigan State, he really helped us, you know. But he's 3 for 9 from the field. He's 0 for 3 from three. He misses his free throw. And so, like, he's a scorer, and he's learning as he goes on. But, like, when he gets into those grooves – you know, that it really helps us, but then, you have to have that consistency. But he's in a learning curve more than anything. You know, Brandon Newman is in a learning curve defensively. You know, he'll have good moments defensively. He'll block a couple shots. He'll get a big rebound. He'll get a steal, and then he breaks down doing simple things. And it's just – but Zach Edey's the same way. You know, they'll do some good things. But it's all those guys have that in common. But that's what young people have in common. I just openly talk about it. Like, right. A lot of coaches just say, oh, he's doing great. No, he's not. You know, he's not doing great. If he's doing great, I'd play him all the time. But they all have the ability. There's not one guy in there that doesn't have the ability, you know, Mason too, as a freshman, to break through and be all conference. And to me, that's encouraging. That's really encouraging. And, like, so now here they are. So you just got to kind of get through it. But you can see sometimes in games that, like, I stick with it at the end. I stick with certain people because I'm just not there yet. And they got to show – if they could show some of that in practice where it's simply just, this is what we're doing. Can you do what we're saying to do? And then we move to the next thing and you do that. Then we move to the next thing and you do that. We move to the next thing and you – if you're someone that you move to 10, 12, 13, 14 things and you just keep not – boy, that really, you know, to me, makes me feel good about it. But if you don't and you got that look on your face and your eyebrows are crossed all the time when people are speaking, like, it's – I don't have the trust yet. And so, like, those guys are really, really talented, but they're not really, really productive yet. And we got to get that. But we got to have – our juniors, those goos I brought, like, those guys got to be there every day.
Yeah,
every day. And, like, sometimes we're not there every day. And that's where I talked about the mature pulse. Like, other night, like, that was a great sign because we were down and out now. Like, I'm just hoping to get 40. Like, you know, you got 16 and a half. You're like, oh, hey, that's going to look funny on the ticker, Ray. We scored 38 in Illinois the other day. I'm like, that just doesn't look right on the ticker. You're supposed to flip that around. It's supposed to say 83. Yeah. I'm supposed to say 38 or whatever the hell it said.
Right.
And so, like, to me, I'm like, holy smokes. Like, then you go back and watch the tape and you're like, man, Michigan State played great D, but we fed into them. Like, all 16 of our points were earned. Like, it was like when Jaden came in and got 3 layups, it's like, whoa. And like, you know, we needed that. That really helped us. And so that was just something for our team. I think that was a great confidence booster because it showed, like, the ball did, we were 3 for 24, I think, from three.
Yeah.
And we won at Michigan State. Like, that's a, you know, I always say that when you get there, laughing's better than crying, man. Laughing's better than crying. Like, you go 3 for 24, you're like, oh, okay, you got beat by 20. No, we won by 1, and we found a way to pull it out, and we made some really good plays at the end of the game. Zach made a good play. Mason made a good play. Brandon denied the ball. Eric denied the ball and got that steal. Eric made the pass to Travion for that shot.
Right.
Eric made another pass to Travion when they were fouling him, and they called the second one.
Exactly.
And so, like, a lot of good things, a lot of winning plays happened there at the end.
And leaving that game, like you said, being a big win, and I know for me, we've had big wins, and we come back and we laid a bet. So for me, going into such a big week, I know this week, even when I was a freshman, I mean, we come in last place in the Big Ten my sophomore year, and this was still the biggest game of the year. How do you get these guys mentally ready? I know there won't be fans at Assembly Hall, but how big is this game to the program? How big is this game for you as a Purdue alum, for the fans, just the team now?
Oh, it's, you know, I always talk about it, and I've talked about it publicly before, and you know, when other jobs come open and people come and they call you, they made a big deal when Missouri like tried to hire me, but people do it. Like every, like you got a guy like Tom Izzo, that's been that successful, you know, like people call him every spring. Right. They know he's, but they call him, like people that are success, Jay Wright, like people call those guys that they're that, they've been to Final Fours. They've been, you know, and they're in great positions, but people still call them and check their, you know, their temperature to see, hey, would you have interest? You know, whatever. They've been doing it, those guys, for 20 years. And so when they call, like why that got out, I don't know, because it didn't get out on my end. But you answer the phone and you listen. You listen. Like if anybody would call you about something, like you would call and that's all you do. And you listen. When it got down to it at the end, there's a lot of things that happened. But like I said to myself, like, now, you know, you understand that you can't ever walk back into Assembly Hall as Purdue's coach and try to beat him. Not beat him, but try to beat him. Like you can't ever, like, you're never going to get that feeling again. Like you, and like, to me, I'm like, man, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? Like, you know what I mean? But like, you get to that point, like, and you learn, like you're always learning. Like people always say, well, you're the coach, you should know. No, you don't always know. And that's part of being an understandable person, is just saying, when you don't know, you don't know. Like, okay, now we're going to go figure it out. Not guess so you sound good. So people can say, well, he's the coach, he knows, listen to him. Like, no, I don't know. And like, at that point, I'm like, man, I didn't know if I wanted to do that. I was just like, man, I want to go. I want to take Purdue's team and walk in there with all those people against us. And I want to compete and beat them. You know, I can still remember calling a timeout and running the play and rub cut and handing it to you and you getting to that right hand. Hey, if we'd have got to that left hand, Ray, that pizza wouldn't have tasted any good. I'd have ran that play and got it to your left.
Oh, it's coming middle.
Spinning back. You're going to spin, weren't you? And so, like, that to me is, like, you know, what it's about, because it's so hard. It's hard to beat your rival. It's hard to win on the road in the Big Ten. But that's how I grew up. Like, my first Indiana-Purdue game, you know, we had rabbit ears, right? You're young, man. We had rabbit ears on our TV. You know, we had 13, 8, 6, and 4. And 4 was fuzzy. So you had to get your rabbit ears and get them worked up. And I was an Indiana fan. I grew up an Indiana fan. Yeah. But, you know, they didn't want me. They were smart. And so, like, coming to Purdue, like, I was, you know, from day one, I was like, man, I love this dude, Coach Katie. I loved it. Like, I loved how he prepared. I loved how he, you know, he had that venom about him. Like, he was going at him. Like, he was going to fight him.
How big of an influence does he play in kind of how you go about your, like, your day-to-day coaching or how you've done things?
Like, you know what? Like, I think people overreact to things. Like, I try to be professional, even though I'm competitive, like, during the game. But, like, you see me behind the scenes how it is and how I feel. Like, you know, that's how I feel, man. Like, you know, you got to do it. Like, you're laughing because you've heard you can't say it on here, but it's like, it's how I feel. But you could still be professional.
Right.
You can still, like, go out there, man, have some sense about you. You know, go be competitive, embrace the physicality of the game, you know, have some, you know, have a way about you. Like, have some class. Right. That's what I say every time we lose, and as you know.
Exactly.
Every time we lose, like, you know, class is what you show when you things don't go your way. And that's when you get people that'll compete, that will play hard, and they'll have that balance of class. And that's the full package there. And that's what I try to get our guys to do. But, like, There's nothing that beats it, man. There's nothing that beats playing against your rival. And I know they feel the same way. I know a lot of former players and coaches, and they feel the same way. But you got to earn it. Like we're going in there Thursday. You got to earn it. Like, you know, they're tough. They're physical too. They want to win too. So, like, you know, how are you going to separate yourself? You know, what are you going to do when things get tough?
Coach. I know. Coach, like you said, that was easy for me. But I do have a couple questions before we get you out of here. I appreciate everything. I'm looking forward to the game on Thursday. I'm actually going to go live on the network after the game with a former IU player. I don't know if we released it yet, so that could have been breaking news. But after the game, we're going to go live to discuss the game. So I hope I have a lot to talk about. But, Coach, I got a couple questions before we get you out of here. First question I got, I want to know, this is for me. And also, I think I saw this on Twitter last night. If you could build a team from Purdue, a starting five, a first seven, all-time Purdue team, who would you put on it?
We've had all-time Purdue team or team people I've coached?
Let's do people you coached. No, no, no. Let's do people you've played with or coached.
Played with or coached.
Or we seen. Had... Let's do this. No, because I actually, no, I want to go back a little bit. Let's go back from high school on.
From my high school on. Okay. That, you know, that's very difficult. We've had five All-Americans, not honorable mention, All-Americans, you know, since we've been here. Carson, Etwan, Rob, Juwan, and Biggie. And so, like, right there, they kind of separate themselves. If you're playing in an actual game, you probably need to float some people in there because Etwan Moore can guard people. Juwan Johnson can guard people. Robbie Hummel can guard people. Biggie is just okay. But he's the best rebounder in the mix and he can really pass. So he's going to blend with people. Carson needs to get up some jumpers. And so those guys are the one thing I'll say about these guys, those three guys, and like David Teague and Carl Landry. Carl Landry is the best pro out of all of them so far. Each one probably close. And so like, he probably needs to be in there, even though he wasn't an All-American. David Teague was a two-way player. You know, Chris Kramer was such a good defensive player. Dakota Mathias was so efficient. You know, you were such a good defensive player. So when you're getting a team and you want to get 10 to 12 guys, like you see it a lot with those USA teams, like they're getting the best eight. Then those next four, you know, you're getting in some specialty type guys to make your team run and work and things of that nature. But, like, when you go back to my high school, like, you're throwing in, like, Troy Lewis and Todd Mitchell. Yeah, Todd Mitchell was a load. Everett Stevens. Yeah. Everett Stevens is, like, who's as athletic as he is that could guard and play the position and shoot good from three? Like Everett Stevens' stock's going to go way up. Troy Lewis's stock goes way up because of what we do now differently with the three-point line. Like, they weren't doing the things that we're running, like, I heard Troy Lewis on a podcast just saying, like, can you just run all those things for me like you're running for Carson and Klein? Like, and it's true. It's just like the game was different. Like, people weren't running stuff like that. And I think that's where we've been, you know, with Greg Gary and now with Micah Shrewsbury. It's like allowing to steal everything from everybody else and try to bring it, you know, into what we're doing to kind of fit our personnel. But no, that would be really where I didn't even mention like AJ Hammonds is the most talented player I've coached. He's the second most talented person I've been around outside of Glenn Robinson.
That's a big statement. Yeah, that's
You know what? You know, people say that and they always come back to me on that. It's a really easy statement.
Oh, yeah.
That's how talented he was.
I tell people that all the time.
Yeah, yeah,
how good he was.
People don't realize, like, how good of a horse player he was. Like, you know, if you wait after practice and shoot and you want to go shoot with him, he'll bury you.
Yes.
He'll bury you. Unless you just, you know, you can really do it. Like, he'll make you look like a fool. Like, he'll sit out there and slingshot threes in there and be like, hey, man, AJ just hit 10 straight threes. And, like, the next day you do the same thing. Like, he can make free throws. I always said he always made pressure free throws because he didn't realize it was pressure. He's like, okay, no big deal. If I miss it, no big deal. Whatever. And that's why he made him. He always made him. But he was just – he could rebound. He could block shots. He could go over either shoulder. He could shoot jumpers. He was big. He was mobile. You know, he was talented. He was talented.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that. That was great. And, Coach, I got to ask one question from Twitter. I don't know if you appreciate the question or not. But when you're telling your players to move, and I wanted to know this my freshman year. I figured it out later in life. Where are you necessarily telling them to go? Because now there's no fans in the arena. And we hear you yelling, move, move, move.
Yep.
And fans want to know, where are you telling these players to move to?
Well, we have rules to what we do, as you know. And so, like, the ball needs to move and bodies need to move against a set defense. So something I write on the board every game is a statement. And it's kind of a play on words. I don't know where I got it from. And it's patiently aggressive.
Yes.
Right? Patiently aggressive. And it's a play on words, but it's offense. That's what encompasses offense. Like, I'm going to be aggressive. And if it's there, I'm taking it. And if it's not there, I'm going to move the ball. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to move bodies. I'm going to set screens away from the ball. I'm going to back screen. I'm going to down screen. We're going to ball screen. We're going to dribble handoff. We're going to hand off. We're going to quick hit. We're going to get into our action. We're going to play through the post. We're going to play through pin downs. And so we have rules in terms of if I curl, you raise. If I back screen, you raise. Now, if they go to switching, we got switching rules. to what we do. And so we're always on the same page, and then we're communicating our cuts. So if I'm communicating to Ray, then I'm curling and he's setting it for me. He knows he's raising. If I back cut, Ray sees me. So then he's raising. If I straight cut, Ray's either getting to the rim or he's getting away, depending on who he is and depending on how the defense. If they're switching, now we got slip rules. We got slip fade rules on down screen. We got slip up rules on back screens. But we want to be able to move the ball. We want to be able to move the defense, and we want to be able to move bodies. But we want to be able to do it being on the same page, setting good angles for screens, knowing if they're switching or not switching, you know, and just understanding, you know, when slips can come into play against how they're handling ball screens, you know, when they're switching five ways versus four ways versus three ways versus none at all. Do they get under down screens? Do they stay tight on down screens? Do they have any clue what they're doing? Some people just go guard them, like go guard them. And like, sometimes you're like, I can't give you anything because these dudes are out here just hooping. But most people have, you know, a method to their madness. So when I'm saying move, that encompasses everything I just talked about, and we work on that a lot. Yeah. We work on that through running cut through versus zone. We work on that through 5-on-0. People always say, like, man, come to your practice, you run 5-on-0 stuff more than anybody. Well, let me explain something to you. If you can't run it versus no one, you're definitely not going to be able to run it versus someone. I promise you, if you stink at running offense and there's no defense, oh, you really stink running versus a defense. So I spend a lot of time, because that's me and you being on the same page. That's me throwing to your eyes instead of your body. Right. Now when you add, we've had more people that can kind of get in and play dummy defense, you know, through it. We got a lot of walk-ons now. So they get in a lot and they guard how they do it, but it's kind of like a three-quarter type deal. And they get in there just to give us the refresher of not just words on how we're going to get defended in this game. You're going to see it. We do more stuff now, whereas we only would do our walkthrough for defense. We do more stuff now where, you know, part of our walkthrough, part of our dry, is something where you run it without a defense, if people don't know that. We do the offensive piece too. Because think about it. If we can constantly get good shots, we can constantly stay out of transition. We can constantly set our defense. Like in basketball, like the sport is so connected offensively and defensively together. If you're a really good offensive team, you just helped your team be good defense. We all understand about sometimes your best offense is your defense. Like people always say that, like, hey man, let your defense be your offense. And now you're getting in transition. Well, on the flip of it, don't let that happen. So if you're constantly getting in transition scoring and you're constantly stopping them from getting in transition, you got a huge advantage, especially if you're getting some, you know, some buckets off the glass. If you're getting some, you know, and that's something for us that we've always done with our jammer, trying to get those long rebounds and trying to get those kickback threes and being able to play off of that. So you got, against good people, you got to steal, you know, you got to steal possessions in transition and on the glass. But that's really the kind of the gist of everything when I'm always screaming move. So.
Right, Coach, I know why you always scream move, but I understand jamming now. I never did until – I mean, no, you just, boom, I got it. Yes. The rebound, stuff like that, I definitely get it now.
Yeah, the number one thing in jamming, people always say, well, you're not turning that guy over, whatever. Yeah, but he's not passing it ahead for them to score either.
Yeah,
okay. If you got big dudes, you're telling them to crash the offensive glass, you're buying them a second or two to get their big butts back on defense.
Exactly. Nah, that makes perfect sense.
If you got some big dudes, like 300-pounders, or they're just lazy, like if you got a good jammer, you're helping it. Like, you know, the big dudes get tired. They'll just shut down on you. Like, boy, you talk about an oil leak. They got all the oil just fell out of their engine. They're like, woo, Coach, I need one. Well, this isn't hockey, big fella. Like, you're going to have to wait for that buzzer to go off or we can sub you in, sub you out.
I played with Isaac Hodgson. Isaac won the one game. Isaac just whispered to me and said, Ray, I need one, man. It's been like six times up and down. I can't do nothing. I did that before you, big fella. But nah, Coach, I appreciate the time. I know you got to run. Thank you. Again, like I said, I've always appreciated. Quick story I got. I've never told anyone this, but in high school, I tore my meniscus. I tell my parents not to call Purdue. I tell them, don't call them. They're going to take my scholarship. I'm extremely worried. You guys didn't take my scholarship, long story short. You stuck with me. And I know people always question or always ask me, did I ever think about leaving, especially after my freshman year, I didn't play much. But after my sophomore year, we didn't have a great year. But It was something about your loyalty that fed into me even young, and even not lying to me as an eighth grader, ninth grader, then sticking with me when I knew other guys' programs and stick with them. It's never anything I wouldn't do for the program or do for you. I appreciate you, and just thank you for the time.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. But what it comes down to, though, Ray, is, and I say this a lot about Dakota, is like it's how you were raised. So when you hit adversity, what you did when you hit adversity was stick it out and fight. And that's what like a lot of people don't like. I've talking publicly about transfers and things, and look where you are and what it set for you. But that's how you were before. Like you're like your parents weren't, you know, your mom's still the only person that's ever talked to me about I wasn't hard enough on you. I mean, think about that. You know, some mom calls me and says, she didn't call me, she came and met with me. I just think you need to be harder on him. I'm like, I'd be the only guy I got that's trying to do what I'm saying. Like, I'm supposed to yell at him? But I understood what you're saying. I understood, like, she knew, like, to stay on you. She knew her son, like, stay. But we need more of that. Yeah. Like, don't give the credit to me. Give the credit to them. Because I always say you can't erase 18 years, good or bad. Yeah. Can't erase it. Like it was in you as to when something happens. It's like Dakota. Like Dakota figured out how to defend. Yeah. Like he's not where he's at if he didn't figure out how to defend. Even as good as he is offensively, he just isn't. But he had to physically get there. He had to commit himself to the physical shape that he's in right now. And then, you know, his game comes out because he can make plays, he can make shots, he can pass, he knows how to play. But if he's just out there wobbling around and he can't defend anybody, like, right. he can't get to where he is, you know, with the Sixers and doing what he's doing. And you just can't. But, like, he went and got it figured out. But, like, you see how he was, you know, he was raised through hard work. You know what I mean? And so, like, sometimes guys are like, the talent is there, but the substance isn't.
Right.
And those guys end up being okay, but they never end up being as good as they should. The guys that are just oozing with substance, like yourself, like him, they always max out. Like you maxed out. Like I know you feel like you should have scored more, but like you maxed out. Like you're not by yourself. Right. You know, like we should have got you the ball more than AJ. I mean, get out of here. You know what I mean? No, you're not getting the ball more than AJ. All right. And so like whoever you play with, you get the ball more in Biggie? No. Sorry, Ray. No. It's not working. And so, like, you got to be smart about it. Like, Dakota found his way. Like, you found your way. But you found it through intelligence and hard work. Like, you set back and just, like, I always tell those guys, like, if they push back on me, okay, I'm lying. My bad. I'm just making this shit up. They look at me like, what? I'm like, come on, man. I'm watching it. I'm seeing it. I'm trying to help you. Right. You're looking at me like I'm like against you. Right. I go, whoever that fool was before me or whoever's out there in this world, that when you do those things, they aren't trying to correct you or hit you between the eyes with the truth. Shame on them.
Right.
Shame on them. Yeah. Then I'll tell them straight up, like, I know your high school coach. I know he was saying it to you. Yeah. I know he was trying to correct you, but you weren't listening.
Yeah.
Because you're the third ranked player in the state and you're 84th in high school. That doesn't matter. Learn to take what we're giving you, compete, but be functional. A lot of guys can't be functional. Like, you learn to be functional. Your prep school coach every now and then still sees me and says, hey, man, like, that dude became an unbelievable defender. He was an awful defender for me. I said, that's his decision. You made the decision because you know you were smart enough to know that's how you were going to get on the court.
That's true.
You were smart enough to know. Some guys aren't smart enough to know. Like, man, like they're like, they're in like what, I'm against you? So I'm against you, but yet I offered you a scholarship. Yeah. Yet I drove to your school three or four times. I got my own family. You know what I mean? Like when they get their own family, they'll be like, man, that dude was there a lot. Well, if I'm there, I can't be with them.
That's true.
So like, I don't want to randomly, these guys will be like, hey, go see this guy, go see that guy. I'm like, no,
right.
I'm going to see them. I'm going to see these guys. These are the guys I like. And I'm not always right. I'm not saying I'm always right.
Right.
But like, I get attracted to certain types of behavior. Yeah. And that's what people don't understand. They get attracted to their talent. I get attracted to the behavior of a player. Like, are you a good dude? Do you play hard? Are you functional? Like, you know, do people want to play with you? People, and can you make shots? Like, you know, whatever it might be, like, it's like, you know, you have to be able to have some of those things. And we're not in the – I when I first got here, we kind of accumulated talent. And I made some real mistakes. And now it doesn't mean I'm perfect going forward, but it's like, find some guys that are going to be productive, find some guys that are going to fit at Purdue, and you're going to have a better chance of, you know, fitting together a good team.
No, that's perfect. And no, that's a perfect way to end, Coach. I appreciate your time. I just want to make sure everybody out there, make sure you click and subscribe. Make sure you go to RayfieldDavisBasketball.com. Subscribe with your email. Have our first basketball camp coming up in West Lafayette for spring break. Bigger than basketball camps will be hitting the summers. Everybody be on the lookout. Appreciate it.